Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome, it's the Apparatus Architects with Mike Wilbur and Tom Shand. Over the course of the last week or so, we did a little work out in the great city of Indianapolis, got back home, so we're back in the nice warm climates of New York, Mike and Tom, and our rundown today. We're going to do a little industry updates. There have been a few recent announcements and a couple of major introductions that have occurred in the last couple of weeks. As always, Brother Mike's going to talk about some recent accidents and things that did not go well, and then Mike and Tom are going to review some of the new products that we saw in the past week or so out at the FDIC in Indianapolis. So with that in mind, we'll start out with the industry updates. Sometime a couple of weeks ago back, Spartan Motors of Charlotte, Michigan announced that they were going to be consolidating their operations. And with that, we don't mean that they're going to be built, you know, putting everything under one roof, but they're coming out under a new banner known as Spartan EVR, which stands for Emergency Response Vehicles. Actually, ERV. Got to apologize for that. And under the ERV logo will be the Spartan chassis, the apparatus manufacturer formerly known as Crimson, and they have now an affiliation with GMAX Corporation that has facilities over in Europe in both France and Germany, and their operation down in Ocala, Florida, of Classic Fire. So the ERV group now will have United States-based manufacturing facilities in Brandon, South Dakota, Effort of Pennsylvania, and Ocala, Florida. And it was pretty evident from the display that Mike and I saw out at FDIC in Indy, a very, very wide range of products that we'll be talking about in a few minutes. Secondarily, but probably of equal importance, Rosenbauer back several weeks ago had a large announcement and had folks come down to the Texas Motor Speedway, and it was followed up by a introduction of their new Commander cabin chassis out at FDIC. So Rosenbauer now joins the ranks of other builders that produce their own cabin chassis in-house. The cab is 99 inches wide. It's currently offered in two different lengths, center line of front axle, the back of cab of 60-inch and 70-inch. So for those of us in a fire service, we might refer to that as a medium cab and a long cab. It's going to be offered in both a flat 11-inch and 24-inch raised roof, and at this time offered with the Cummins, both the ISC, the ISL, and the big block ISX engines. So those were two of the things that have happened here within the last 2 to 4 weeks, things that have kind of been notable within the apparatus industry. And as usual, we have some recent accidents and news bits that are worthy. Mike, what do you have for us on that?
What do we do in accidents now? Okay.
Hi, everybody. We have three accidents that we would like to go over this morning that are, I felt, picked them out of a bunch that have happened recently. On Wednesday, April 18th, a Eureka fire truck rolled over on Edgefield Highway in Etkin County on Monday in South Carolina. It was the only vehicle involved in the incident. It was driven by a firefighter. He was driving a 1980 GMC fire truck from the Etkin County community to a vehicle fire shortly before 5 p.m. when he took a right turn from Edgefield Highway onto Springfield Church Road too sharply and rolled the truck. The reason that I wanted to highlight this is that both firefighters on board the truck were wearing their seat belts, and if you look at the cab, it's on the website, emergencyvehiclerespondse.com, you can see that they probably would not have survived without their seat belts. Next is a follow-up on a very serious accident that happened several years ago. It happened in Westchester County, New York, just north of New York City, and it went to a jury trial in a liability suit, and a jury has just ruled in favor of a Harrison woman injured in a 2007 when her car was struck by a fire chief, a Harrison County volunteer fire chief, en route to a nearby motor vehicle accident. The jury on Friday ordered the former fire chief as well as the town of Harrison to pay the civilian driver $825,000 in damages. That's the fire chief and the town are going to have to pony up $825,000 to pay the aggrieved civilian in this case. Her attorney said, "I think justice was done. I think the most important lesson here, and this is for all of us, that first responders, no matter how noble their intentions, are still required to exercise due care in responding to an emergency." The fire chief was driving a sports utility vehicle north on Harrison Avenue at around 60 miles an hour on the morning of June 21, 2007, speeding towards a crash on the Hutchinson River Parkway. He passed yet another firefighter's vehicle that was ahead of him, and radio transmissions recorded him chiding the other firefighter for going too slow. And then he pulled into the oncoming traffic lanes and drove through a red light into the intersection with Union Avenue. The civilian vehicle, who was then 59, moved her vehicle through the intersection. She had the green light, and she was traveling at about 20 to 30 miles an hour, and the two vehicles collided. The civilian driver also said that she never heard any sirens at all. The attorney said his client suffered injuries to her neck and has had difficulty sleeping and had to reduce her activity significantly. The fire chief was not seriously injured. Reached by phone Monday afternoon, the town supervisor declined to comment on the ruling. The town has 30 days to file motions for appeal. According to New York state law, a driver of an emergency vehicle may run through red lights, but only after slowing down as may be reasonably necessary for safe operation. They may also exceed the posted maximum speed limit so long as it does not endanger life and property. And obviously, in this particular case, neither one of those were adhered to. And so breaking the law and ultimately costing a lot of money and a lot of heartache for a lot of people. I think this is just one in a series of lessons to us that we need to slow down, take a deep breath, and realize that the end doesn't justify the means. And the last, again, is one that's probably going to end up just like the one in Westchester County, but we go way across the other side of the world to Australia, where a firefighter of a crash truck killed three architects in Darwin. The driver of that fire truck is facing court charges and what they call this in Australia is dangerous driving charges. There were two principals of an architect firm called Tropo in Northern Territory, and they had husband and wife team, and they had another architect in the back seat of their four-wheel drive when they were hit at an intersection with an ARF vehicle, a crash truck from the Darwin Airport. And if you know about crash trucks, they kind of have they're kind of raised in the front, and there's a picture again on the website, and it shows two-thirds of the car actually underneath the truck. The civilians really never had a chance. The driver of the truck was entering the intersection against a red light and driving negligently and driving dangerously, causing harm of death. He was driving that airport truck to a mutual aid call for the NT Fire Service, and he is going to be back, the driver of that truck, in court again in June. And this is just another reminder If we don't stop at red lights, if we don't slow down, if we don't pay attention, bad things can happen to some really good people. What do we have next, Tom?
Well, Mike, as much as it pains me to start out with aerial devices, I figured that in order to keep you lucid here for the rest of the podcast, we're going to talk about some of the unique aerial devices that we encountered during our walk around at the FDIC last week.
You mean, Tom, there were no unique pumpers?
Oh, Mike, don't worry. It's going to be equal time, and that's on me, and we're getting that at the end here. So we're going to start out with, not that it's a brand-new product, but the configuration of this vehicle was certainly unique. Within the Rosenbauer display, which they probably had at least six or seven different vehicles, was a T-Rex articulating platform that was going to a rather unique industrial facility in the oil sands up in northern Alberta, Canada. And while the configuration of the T-Rex device in and of itself was somewhat standard, I've seen a lot of different places to put pump panels during my somewhat elongated fire service career, but this had inside of the Spartan chassis a electronic touch control pump panel that allowed you to sit facing forward, and the panel was installed over the top of the engine box and where the two rear-facing seats would nominally be in a wraparound configuration. And if that wasn't enough of a wow factor, when you got outside and looked at the turntable controls, it had a fully enclosed, as I would call it, like a crane-style enclosure with access door window, including a windshield wiper on that. So, Mike, I know you walked around and took some photos of that. Your thoughts on that device?
Yeah, it was fairly unique. Obviously, for the climate where the truck was going, it appeared to be well-built and suited for that. We got up on top of the truck, and there was this bracket on top of the roof of the cab, and didn't understand what that was, and then asked about that, and that was actually the bracket to put on the front of it to hold the Stokes basket. The T-Rex unit, for those of our listeners that really don't understand these units, there's several available. The Pierce has the Skyarm and the Wrights in North America, Tobranto. And then we have the T-Rex from Rosenbauer. And then Guymax has partnered with Spartan to provide a unit similar to that. And basically, they're a combination of an aerial ladder, a tower ladder, and at the end of it, it has an articulating boom, and that boom is, it looks to be about maybe 15 feet or so from the knuckle where it articulates down, and many times people looking for these are have high roof parapets that they want to address or other issues. In the oil field there, certainly the idea of carrying Stokes baskets and flowing large amounts of water at this refinery complex are going to be part of its duties for sure, Tom.
Thanks, Mike. Another device which was interesting, if you look back, you know, sometimes people say history tends to repeat itself, and it's interesting because while the devices that Mike mentioned that have been out on the market from both Rosenbauer and Pierce, we now have another complementary product that was offered by the Spartan Emergency Response Vehicle Group, and it was a GMAX device, 138 feet, rated vertical reach. Getting up there, Mike, a little bit higher than the 100-foot company, too, and that's going to be marketed under the trade name of a Telstar platform. Some of the dimensional information on that unit: the platform swivels off 45 degrees to both the left and the right. You need to have a 14-foot door to get this in because this rig is 12'4" overall height, 41'6" overall length, so rather compact given the rated vertical reach of the unit. It was on a 240-inch wheelbase, and like most aerial devices today, was equipped with a 2,000 GPM pump and a 300-gallon tank. So, Mike, your thoughts on the What kind of applications from a practical standpoint do you see that these devices could be used over and above a conventional, say, you know, a rear-mount 100-foot platform?
Well, Tom, they seem to have gained great favor, particularly in Canada and then in European countries, and really have not made a substantial impact yet in the U.S. market. I think we're still trying to figure that out. As firefighters here, what would be the best place or the best use? A couple of things I found fascinating going from seeing the T-Rex to the Spartan group and to see this unit is that it appeared to me, just the way the truck was set up, that there was quite a bit more in the way of jack spread with the Spartan unit than the T-Rex unit. Kind of on the downside, it looked like it took a little bit more room to set the vehicle up. Of course, there was more of a reach with the Spartan unit, so that would account the further you go up, obviously, the more you need at the base somewhere to sustain that load and to balance the unit out. The other thing was the cost. I asked the cost of the Spartan Group's unit, and it was $1.2 million. Which is comparable with a lot of high-end aerial towers. I put the price, a lot of time those units will come in now at 1.4 or 1.5 million, so it seemed like it was a little less expensive than perhaps our competitors. So that's two of the salient features of that that kind of stood out for me, Tom.
Thanks, Michael. Getting back to maybe a little bit more traditional unit, Pierce, within the units that they had on display, had their first build-out using the platform of their Dash CF cabin chassis, where the engine is in the back, low-mounted in the crew area with seating for six. They had that rig configured out as a rear-mount ladder, but also configured with their Puck pump design, which incorporated a 300-gallon water tank. That unit, rated at 105 feet vertical reach, had 16-foot spread outriggers, 750-pound tip load, and the kind of things that I pay attention to just relative to having the unit to be maneuverable was built out on a 259-inch wheelbase, 11 foot 5 inches. So for those of us who only have 12-foot doors, this rig slides in, and an overall length of 43 feet, 1 inch. So it's interesting, as compared to the Spartan unit that we just mentioned. There's a 138-foot rated unit with a shorter overall length than the standard four-section 105-foot rear-mount ladder that we've been accustomed to. So when we talk with departments and talking about determining the operational footprint of the unit, there's a lot more to it than just making sure it fits in the bay and it gets in and out and it's, you know, short enough, and in terms of overall height and overall length. We need to be able to take these units and set them up in different parts of your response area to make sure that they're actually going to work. One of the other devices that we saw from KME, their 123-foot aerial cat rear mount ladder. This unit, as compared to the Spartan unit and the Pierce unit, which were built out obviously as demonstrator units to take out and to bring to your department, the KME unit was built up for Westfield, Indiana, had 114 feet of horizontal reach, 500-pound tip load, wheelbase very similar, almost identical to the Pierce unit at 260 inches. 11 foot 10 inches overall height. So once again, if you've got a 12 foot door and no severe breakover angle, it may potentially fit your station with an overall length of 44 feet 2 inches. The very interesting thing on that unit to me, Mike, was they had it advertised as a 1500 GPM waterway, and it was capable of a storefront blitz. Now, if you're in an urban area and you're thinking storefront blitz, it might be one of these rave groups coming in to rip off your store and steal all the Hostess Twinkies and the Snapple. I'm sure hoping that's not the case. Can you help our listeners out? What is a storefront blitz?
One of the things that we've been trying to teach, Brother Tom, for the last several years in aerial class is the idea of being able to use an aerial tower, a tower ladder, or an aerial ladder as an offensive weapon at a row of stores. It pains both Brother Tom and I greatly to go on firehouse.com website, and probably twice a week you will see rows of stores on fire where the fire is through the roof on store number 3, and the FD pulls up with their aerial device, proceeds to put it over the fire on store number 3, push the fire down back through the vent hole, and proceed to blow to burn the whole row of stores down, all 30 stores. There's no magic to that, and it's not very clever to or very useful to be doing that. And so the idea with the KME offering is to be able to take that nozzle at the end of that 123-foot ladder and put it up at an angle and basically use the truck as an offensive weapon with very few people. This is shorthanded firefighting at its best, and apply 1,500s of gallons of water up into the cock loft, and you could actually take the unit, it seems, and cut an inverted trench. For years and years, we have taught firefighters in rookie school how to cut trenches, how to make trench cuts on large area building roofs. And for me, for my career, I've probably been involved in maybe 20 of those, and only a handful of them ever worked, because by the time you had enough resources up on the roof to cut and pull the trench, the two stores that you skipped trying to make the stop, the fire went past those and into two more stores, and you were just kind of late with that tactic, and it didn't necessarily work all that terrific in some cases. And so with this, you're applying water up and cutting an inverted hydraulic trench, and then you can take that water and actually operate in the cock loft, that space between the top of the ceiling tiles and the bottom of the roof beams, and you can operate the piece in there and push the fire back on itself and save all those stores in a row. And this unit from KME really lends itself to that kind of strategy and tactic at a row of stores, this blitz fire.
Thanks for that explanation, Mike Boyd. For an engine guy like me, that clears that up. I thought maybe for a minute the storefront blitz was something that going to open up Wilbur's Hardware Store, and you're the greeter there at the front door. Come on in. Welcome, Kmart shoppers. All right. Well, now we're going to move off aerial devices here for a few minutes and just talk about some of the new products. Several of these may have had a couple of days, if not weeks of introduction, but first time you're actually able to get to see the product up close and personal, as they say. Schmiel Fire Apparatus in Nebraska had introduced their Centron 2 chassis, which they have partnered with American LaFrance to do the running gear for them and the cab, and to have a very distinctive look on the front end with some Schmiel specific options that are available to them. And that's going to be built up in a 134-inch and a 148-inch long cab, in both a flat roof and a raised roof, and wheelbases to suit. So they had that chassis on display. In the fire pump area, it was pretty obvious to me in visiting Waterous, Darley, and Hale that there's a lot of emphasis on taking what we have known to be the traditional fire pump and its associated size, and to be able to shrink it down. And we're going to give you two different examples. Shrink it down in either size, physical size of the pump, which means size and weight savings, and also in some cases shrinking down the GPM rating. And so with that in mind, for a few minutes that we stopped into the Hale booth, they were unveiling their Q-Max XS pump, which is the grandson, really, of the Q-Max pump that's been around for quite a while. The pump ratings available on the Q-Max XS, 1,000 GPM up to 2250, but because of a redesign of the pump body, it allows the fire truck builder, if you were using electric valves, to shrink the pump panel, the physical width of the pump shrinks all the way down to 28 inches, 28 inches, 2 foot 4 inches. if you're using manual valves, because we have linkages and potentially swing handles involved, the pump panel can shrink down to as little as 34. So while we can get a lot of space savings and potentially weight savings there, this pump is still outfitted with 12 4-inch ports and one 3-inch port, so we can plumb it up and do just about anything we want. So you can see over the course of the last couple of years with the evolution of the Pierce Puck design, KME's unit that has a similar, smaller, shrunk pump panel, Emergency One with their EMAX, that while we are not looking at giving up a lot of our GPM capacity, we are looking at physically shrinking the space and the amount of landscape that we need to be able to get the pump to fit in there. Now, just when you think that you've seen everything, Mike and I and his son Nick back last week were walking down the aisle, and here's an ambulance. And I normally don't stop a whole lot to look at ambulances, but as we're walking by this one unit, we see discharges and intakes, and I look up above my gray-haired head, and there are three crosslays. So with that, I'm thinking we need to stop and do the old 360 size up on this unit. Volusia County, Florida had taken delivery of four Braun ambulances built out on Spartan chassis that actually had pump modules installed between the cab and the ambulance module. And while this may have been common in other parts of the United States, I'd have to say for Brother Mike and Tom, this was a first for us. So doing a little bit more investigation, these units apparently run out, and I'd call them an EMS transport. It's a MIDI pumper. They're built out, as we said, on the Spartan chassis, 173-inch wheelbase, overall length of 335 inches. It's got a 500 GPM pump, a 300-gallon water tank, a 30-gallon Class A foam tank, and it's equipped with calves. Now, Mike, I know that you probably wouldn't get out of the front seat of your ladder truck for this one, but it's a different concept. And I guess you have to be somewhat open to the spirit that you think of the day of the just standard conventional pumper, that we've morphed those into rescue pumpers and rescue engines. We've taken a ladder truck, and that's morphed right, wrong, or indifferent into a Quint of some type. We've now taken medic units and given them suppression capabilities as well. It's a different concept, and you looked at it and were just as somewhat stunned as I was.
You got that right, Brother Tom. I don't know, looking at the unit, my first impression was is that it does, it seemed to do ambulance work well. The compartment on the back seemed to be the standard ambulance, but it just seemed to have enough water and hose on it to, in my opinion, to get somebody in trouble. Okay for maybe a car fire or something, but just looking at the unit from a structural firefighting potential or capability, it seemed to be potentially lacking there, at least with the ability. It didn't appear to be any way to lay a line, so that you were had very little in the way of suppression capabilities, perhaps a car fire or a dumpster fire or something like that. Looking at the unit and asking some questions, I'm not sure it's something that you would want to run up first due to a structural fire and jump off and try to make an impact. It just seemed to be lacking like that. But it was an interesting unit, and it may actually be a wave of the future. I mean, whoever thought that rescue pumpers or Quints 30 years ago would take off in the fashion that they have. And as we struggle to provide better, more service with fewer people and fewer tax dollars, this may become the wave of the future as well. Only time will tell.
Well, like I said, it's to go through the exhibits, like at a lot of other shows, and try to be able to capture everything that's there, even in a couple of days, is somewhat of a daunting task. But certainly not to be dismissed in some of the small component folks. We stopped in to talk to Dick Young, the owner and founder of Performance Advantage Corporation, and they've come out with four or five different new brackets that they were introducing at the show. Two things that caught my attention in particular, if you're into looking to get efficient tool and equipment storage within your body compartments, they've developed a stow-and-lock bracket that works well with their any one of their PackTrack family of mounting systems, and that was specifically designed for poles and short hooks or things that have a large head. Okay, and not only to talk about the apparatus, but we had an opportunity to visit a couple of the component folks that supply parts and equipment for the apparatus. One gentleman that we always enjoy spending some time with, Dick Young, owner and founder of Performance Advantage Corporation. They introduced four or five new products for this year, and two of the things that caught my attention in particular, one was a stow-and-lock bracket, which is used with a strap mechanism that can hold offset hooks, poles, shovels, and things like that. Anything that's got a large offset head at the top that maybe some of the other brackets didn't work particularly well. And again, all of these have been tested to 9G. They work with Dick's and Pack's tool mounting system. And they have also developed what they call a pack fast mount, that if you're just looking to mount one or two pieces of odd equipment or to be able to utilize corners of a compartment or like front and side walls and even narrow upper depth compartments that are 12 to 14 inches, this uses very high bonding tape at the back. And once you put that on there, it's not coming off. And it can be used with any one of PAC's other tool mounting systems. IMMI had a nice display of their products, including a product that Brother Mike is very familiar with, the Reach Ready seatbelt system. Mike, for those listeners that might be new to them, I know before, now I'm confused. We were calling it Ready Reach, now it's Reach Ready. The next time we're going to be calling it the Wilbur belt because there's no Wilbur tools. So how are we working on that?
Well, IMMI did some research and found out that Ready Reach was a copyright already coined by another product in another industry, and so the term was reversed to have a reach-ready device. The seatbelt was displayed prominently at their booth, and there was also in the Ferrara booth an FDNY truck, one of 53 that we have ordered from Ferrara and the FDNY, and that was equipped with the Reach Ready system. We have had many inquiries with the new seatbelt, and the principals at IMMI have said that they will fulfill other requests for the Reach Ready system once the New York contract of seatbelts is fulfilled. And we are working diligently on that. And by the end of the second quarter this year, all FDNY units should be retrofitted with the Reach Ready system and in place. And then IMMI is going to have to make some decisions as to how we're going to move forward, how they're going to move forward with the marketing of that particular device. But one could assume that by the end of this year or beginning of next year, that that system should be commercially available for everyone as needed. It seems to, we've done a lot of testing. It works really well. We're seeing a lot more seatbelt uses, certainly up on my job based on it. So we're very proud of that. And the results speak for themselves. And my boss, Chief Stephen Reynes, has always said, if you take the can't-do out of it and make them make something that they can use, that they will probably, firefighters will end up using it. And I think that's certainly been the case with this, Brother Tom.
Well, for our listeners, hopefully we've given you a reasonable rundown of just a small smattering of some of the new apparatus and innovations and equipment. And out at the FDIC from last week, one of the things that Mike and I always like to do is to go around and kind of award our own personal Emmy Awards to what we consider to be the star of the show. So for Tom Shand, this is my equal time for the first 15 minutes of the podcast this month on Aerials. My star of the show, without a question, goes to Jim Crevita and the folks at Custom Fire, who produced a extremely well-designed and well-built rescue engine for the Morningside Fire Department, which is Station 27 in Prince George's County, Maryland. Rescue engines, in to most folks, where we're combining two units into one or try to provide rescue service, we end up having just a giant-sized shoebox on wheels. And while this unit was very well equipped, it was very compact. 199-inch wheelbase, 33 feet overall length, and 116 inches high. That dimension's critical because Morningside actually has a very short overhead door clearance out of their station. Was built up on a Spartan Gladiator chassis, and as they say, ladies and gentlemen, this was not your average Spartan. This was not your dad's Spartan chassis. Whether it came from Spartan or was modified by Custom Fire, the entire inside of the cab, engine box, and everything was Linexed, had very, very excellent job of custom tool mounting that was done by Custom Fire, had a reinforced steel bumper, had six pre-connected lines, a low hose bed, even lower ground ladder mounting that was underneath the hose bed, and a total of six pre-connected lines, and it was a 12-gauge stainless steel body. Without a doubt, whether you wanted to consider it as it was set up to run as a rescue engine or as a pumper, the one unit that, to me, Mike, was very, 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 very memorable. So with that, your star of the show.
As much as it pains me, Brother Tom, I would have to agree. The star of the show certainly goes to Custom Fire for that unit. I found a couple things that were extraordinary. One is just the design of the unit, working hand in hand with the fire department and the builder. They come up with an extraordinary design, like you said, compact. But what I found more fascinating was just the acute attention to detail, just the detailing on the truck, and really was a custom fire truck built for the Morningside Fire Department in just every way. And I think you even found some protection under the unit. I saw you crawling under it. What was that about, Tom?
Yeah, most of the time, if you've ever watched Mike and Tom operate when there's apparatus, Mike's not normally up on the top side looking at aerial devices and ground ladders, and I'm kind of like staring at the pump panel. And because we have noticed with some of the fleet reviews that we've done, that there are some significant rust and corrosion issues for things that, unless you get on a creeper and look underneath your apparatus to see what's holding it up. For example, most of us have migrated away from galvanneal steel unless we're down in the desert southwest or out in California. And if you're up in the northeast or in a climate where we get snow and you've specced out an aluminum body or a stainless steel body, that's one part of the equation. The other potentially more important part is what is the substructure made out of and what's holding it up. And on those units that we've looked at where the apparatus, no matter what age it is, if it's being held up by mild steel, there is either some degree of significant corrosion, or if you haven't experienced yet, you're going to have to keep up on top of it. So I happened to it was on a nice little padded, carpeted display area, so I got down and decided I wanted to see what was holding up the back end of the unit, and it was all stainless steel. What was kind of most surprising to me is then looking at the fuel tank, which is also a high spot of corrosion on a lot of apparatus because of where it's positioned, that fuel tank on that had been Linexed as well. Now, most fuel tanks are typically made out of some type of steel. Some manufacturers either offer as standard, or it can be a couple hundred dollar upcharge to go with stainless steel, and most everybody is now using stainless steel straps to hold the fuel tank on. If you've ever done a responsive apparatus, it's a deeply religious experience. As you go through a corner, if your unit's not equipped with ESC, and your hose load and everything stays on, but you hear this racket in the back, and as your apparatus makes a right, you see your fuel tank going to the left, you pretty much know your response is over. So the way the apparatus is built, both top side and bottom side, is really, really, really important. And while there were a number of outstanding pieces of apparatus on display, that unit, again, from Custom Fire, built by Jim Crevita and his crew, just really, really stood out. Like I said, Mike says, attention to detail. It's the kind of thing you can't really describe it fully to give it justice until you see the unit in person. So, Mike, any parting thoughts here before we sign off for the show?
Yeah, Tom, it was another, last week was another great FDIC experience. Just a lot of different apparatus. Saw a lot of our friends and really had a great time. But also learned that the industry is still hurting, that what was once an industry of 5,500 trucks a year, the industry is going to struggle to do 3,000 trucks this year. And like we always tell everyone, you know, with that said, everybody that was building trucks 3 years ago is still trying to build trucks this year. And just do the math. The math speaks for itself. Can an industry that was supporting X amount of manufacturers building 5,500 trucks still support that same number of manufacturers designing and selling and building 3,000 trucks? And the answer is it's at some point in time, either it has to get better. And by most accounts, talking with the manufacturers at the FDIC, it would appear that there is, although very little, but there is an uptick in sales, and it is starting to come back and get a little bit better. But obviously it took us 3 to 4 years to get this way. There's not any magic pill or magic switch where it's just going to turn itself back on and get back up to that 5,500 level again. So as always, we say buyer beware, make sure you protect the fire department, make sure you protect your interests with Dun & Bradstreet's and bid bonds and performance bonds before you go to contract, and do your homework to make sure that the builder, the manufacturer you engage today will be around tomorrow to service a unit, to service a warranty, and to provide parts going forward for your unit if something were to break.
Thanks, Mike. Well, that's going to wrap up this month's show. It's the Apparatus Architects, Mike Wilbur and Tom Shan. Until the next time, be safe and look forward to seeing you sometime during the course of the year. Take care.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.